B-Pod Studios.
Making the workday a little more entertaining.
Floppity flop flop flop. There.
It's Zoe and the Beetle on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
I'm Christian Arkin, no Zoe, no Beetle today. We got Big Ted alongside, Mr. Johnson. Hello, sir.
What's up, Christian? How are you, bud?
Doing great. Mike Sarge Riley back there in the glass case Sarge. Of takes back there.
What's up, pal? I didn't see you over there, man.
It's nice working with both of you guys.
It's good to be working with you, bud.
I know. Been a while since we've all been in here together.
I haven't seen Sarge in a very, very long time.
I know.
It's good to see all you guys.
Too
I've missed all you guys the last 4 months. You know, it's good to get back to doing some work with you guys.
I know. Really, I mean, we've all been missing a lot of things the last 4 months, I would say, we're all here, we're all healthy, and we're all here until 2 o'clock.
And you're going to dig deep today, Christian.
Yeah.
Emotional show last night.
It was.
And you're doing a back-to-back, which is always, I'm impressed that you worked late last night, and then now here you are this morning at 10 o'clock. It was an emotional day yesterday, so no one's going to feel sorry for doing this job,
no.
And nor should they. But, you know, those were not easy topics to navigate yesterday. So I totally can empathize with just kind of the emotional drain that can take place when you're dealing with sensitive issues like most of the shows were yesterday.
Yeah.
And maybe a little bit into today as well.
Yeah, and hopefully my back-to-back will be better than the Bruins because hopefully we don't lose the show.
Your save percentage is going to be better.
Yeah, right. We don't lose the show 7-1. We have Sarge come in, give up 3 goals. Like, I mean, this could end up being a tough one here, but hopefully not. I did want to talk a little bit to open the show about the last 48 hours and what happened in the NBA and what happened with players in the bubble, because this story, I think, is the dominating story in the sports world and maybe even beyond that. I mean, this was like nightly news sort of stuff here with the NBA and their mini strike, and it does appear as though they're going to be coming back this weekend. We don't have a schedule yet, but Chris Haynes over at Yahoo Sports had a pretty good collection of sort of, you know, everything that happened and how it all went down, a good timeline with everything in the NBA. And before we get to it, let me just ask you this, Ted. As a former professional athlete and someone who I know has had, your own issues maybe with unions and leagues and things of that nature, this is obviously different from that, but were you surprised to find out, number one, that the players were willing to strike like that? And number two, were you surprised that they ultimately decided to come back this weekend?
I was not surprised that they ultimately decided to strike, because there's not a more forward-thinking, I would say, progressive kind of, just on a different level with the way it thinks, especially from the leadership at the top of the NBA. And the partnership, we talked to Cedric Maxwell yesterday, and it was, you know, I kind of asked him about how that's changed over the years from when he played till now. Just the partnership and the willingness from the commissioner, Adam Silver, to the players, to, you know, just that back and forth that he has with them is so unique and so different. And I wish other, you know, commissioners in the other leagues would maybe take a lead from him. I wasn't surprised the Milwaukee Bucks did what they did, considering the thoughtfulness you have with the commissioner on these types of issues. I'm not surprised by that, to answer your first question. And I said this all day yesterday, if you really want to have an impact, if you really, I think, really want to make it, for a day or two, if you're going to, not play the games, you're going to postpone the games because of how you feel about what is going on in the world today, that's fine, and I applaud that. I just don't know how it's going to really impact long term. It's like, okay, if the games are were postponed the last 2 days, we're going to pick them up probably starting this weekend, and then it's going to go be back to business as usual. If the NBA decided to cancel all the games, the postseason, and just be done with the season, My goodness. A lot of people are going to totally disagree with me on this point. A lot of people think you got to be playing to have the impact.
Right.
I think not playing is a much bigger impact than if you were playing, quote unquote, using the platform of your playing to get your message out. I think not playing is to me sends a stronger message. Now, if you don't play, you better use that time to help kind of the cause, if you will. And, you know, players, to me, if you're not doing that, then it's for naught. But to me, you want to have more of an impact and really have a strong kind of lasting impression, then you don't play the rest of the season. And I thought maybe there's right there, they were on the precipice, the NBA players, of if they did that, to me, it would have been a historical, unprecedented type of action that you haven't seen, players do, I don't think, ever with regard to this kind of stuff.
Yeah, not since, like, the 60s. You know, not since, right, like, the civil rights movement, where you really saw athletes sort of stand up and take more of a role here. And I feel like in some ways you're starting to see that type of thing here again. Now, they are coming back, you're right, and I do think that just the threat of the strike and the threat of the fact that the NBA might go away was a huge, huge deal. And yeah, I mean, we do live in a time now where people have short attention spans, and after the NBA stops playing and they cancel the season, people will look to the next thing and, you know, sort of go on from there. The NFL's starting up soon, and who knows what kind of situations they're going to have to deal with as far as all this is concerned. But I agree with you. I think that was a huge, huge deal and a huge piece of news. And when they decided ultimately to come back, I thought, huh, okay, they might not all be as unified maybe as we think they are. And I think you can go all the way back to LeBron and some of the things that he's said and how a lot of people in the league sort of look to him for leadership and what to do. Patrick Beverley basically said, if LeBron's playing, we're all playing. He walked out of one of the meetings. There was maybe a bit of a disconnect between what the Milwaukee Bucks did. Chris Haynes over at Yahoo said this. He said, players who were scheduled to compete in the ensuing games felt an obligation to sit out because the Bucks' decision wasn't part of an organized plan of action. Many were frustrated and emotionally drained after being caught off guard by Milwaukee's refusal to take the court. The Bucks are up 3-1 in the series, intended to force a forfeit, and were willing to take the loss and forego the opportunity to close out the series. The organization did not anticipate being the catalyst for temporarily shutting down the league. A players' meeting was arranged for 8 o'clock to discuss the next move. That was on Wednesday. Some wanted to leave the bubble, be with family. Others wanted to leave to get on the front lines and support change in the Black community. Others felt there's no bigger platform than the one afforded in the bubble to get their message across. So basically what we just said, I mean, that's what was being said in that meeting. And that is not, I mean, I think everybody sort of agrees that there's a problem here and that things need to change and that they all have a stake in it. But the way to go about that, I think, was not quite as unified maybe as some of the reports or even, you know, just narrative of it would lead us to believe.
Well, it's not surprising, Christian. I mean, how do you... There's so many, you know, there's a lot of guys that play in the NBA, and everybody's got different kind of feelings on this. They're in different kind of places in their career. A lot of guys,
right,
you know, should we be asking, you know, these NBA players to, you know, to walk out on a game to make a statement, but at the sacrifice of their own economic well-being? I mean, look, LeBron James doesn't have to work another day in his life, but the last guy on the bench for XYZ team is trying to scratch out a living and trying to make a career for himself. So he has to sacrifice, you know, forfeit his salary and his chance to play the game for a cause of, you know, like of this magnitude. That's why I think it's really the ultimatum. The players need who in this to really have an impact? The players need the help of
the owners.
The owners.
Yeah.
Okay. So if the NBA owner said, you know what, guys, we're all going to be in this thing together. We're all going to make one big statement. And I tell you what you're going to do. You're going to still get paid. So don't worry about not getting paid. But you're going to have to, if we are not going to play games, you're going to have to fill that time with activities and things that are going to help, quote unquote, the cause. We're not going to pay you to go home and just, you know, start playing golf for the rest of the summer. You're going to have to be doing things that is, quote unquote, helping in the cause. And that's what Jaylen Brown said. Look, if you're going to leave the bubble, you can't leave the bubble to just go, you know, play golf or go to the strip clubs or just go hang out with your family. You got to, if you're going to do this, you got to make it, worth your while, if you will. So to me, it's the NFL and the NBA owners. You really want to have effect long-term change. It's they need to help the players kind of in this cause, if you will. If the players alone, I don't think can get it done, Christian, if that makes any sense.
No, I absolutely think it makes sense. There's an old Chris Rock bit about how, you know, NBA players are rich, but the guy who signs their checks, they're wealthy.
Right.
You know, like,
right.
Like Shaq is rich,
right.
But the guy who signs his check, that guy's wealthy. And there's a difference between that, obviously, between being rich and being wealthy. And it's not just that. A lot of team owners, they have political connections. They have connections with, you know, local government, with local police forces. I mean, who knows? And there's, you know, there's more influence certainly there from wealthy people, even though someone like LeBron is such a big star.
But that's where people will say, well, LeBron James has more power because how many Instagram followers do you have? Like 100 a million? Like it's something insane like that. Okay, that's fine. He can reach out to millions and millions of people, but does he have really the power at the end of the day to create change? No, he doesn't. The NFL owners do. They have a lot of money. They have a lot of pull. They have a lot of connections. They have a lot of influence with the power brokers in the government. Those are the guys that have all the power. It's not the players, and the players need the owners to help push their agenda more than anything.
Yeah. LeBron James was not happy with what the Milwaukee Bucks did. He was one of several players who were kind of angry about that. To him and many others, the Bucks put the rest of the league in a no-win situation. And that's sort of what I thought. When the Bucks said, we're not playing, when they walked off the court, they didn't even walk off the court. They didn't take the court. Orlando walked off the
that's
court,
interesting.
I think is what happened
there.
When that happened, I thought, okay, well, it's going to be tough to come back from this. It's going to be tough to say, all right, we're taking this stand. We're walking off the court. We're not going to play. And then come back this weekend. And that's what they're doing. But I think that was not an easy conversation. That was not an easy decision for the league. And I think there was a lot of frustration, I think, between certain players on different teams who were in different mindsets over
there. So you think, yeah, Milwaukee Bucks doing that, it forced everyone else to kind of now they have to make a decision on that. So maybe I see what you're saying. So maybe in some respects it was unfair because they weren't prepared for that or ready to make those types of decisions. And my feeling is the Milwaukee Bucks, when they did that, they had no idea what the cause and effect was going to be.
Yeah, and now it looks like the NBA will resume this weekend. We don't have an updated schedule yet, but we do have an updated schedule for the NHL and the Bruins. We know when the Bruins will be playing this weekend. We'll tell you all about that right after this.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Wake up, lip readers.
Jacob in Dorchester, are you an expert lip reader?
It's the show whose name is on everyone's lips.
Mike.
Zolak and Bertrand.
Well, you might need the lip reading because you don't listen.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Here on the Sports Hub, Arcan, Ted Johnson, Mike Sarge Riley, all in the house here. In for Zoe Beadle and Hardy. Zoe and Beadle are out. Hardy was on the morning show. You know how it is. The NHL has announced its revised schedule for round two. All NHL playoff games the last 2 days were postponed as the league decided to stand or strike, I guess, in solidarity with the NBA and Major League Baseball. Several teams and games were postponed there as well. We do have an updated schedule for round two, in particular your Boston Bruins. And that schedule will resume tomorrow. Tomorrow at noon, Tampa and Boston will play Game 4. Game 5 will be Monday, so no back-to-back. However, should it get this far, which it might not, Ted, by the way, we would get to Wednesday, September 2nd. That would be Game 6, if necessary. And then if there is a necessary Game 7, that would be played on Thursday. So maybe there will be a back-to-back. The Bruins are going to have to do some work just to get there. But that's the revised schedule. Saturday is Game 4. Monday is Game 5. Game 6 and 7, if necessary, will be Wednesday and Thursday.
Are you a proponent of not having – do you think it's more beneficial to the Bruins to not have back-to-backs? Do you think there's a clear kind of advantage to the Tampa Bay Lightning that when you have to play a second game after you played, you know, the game the day before? Beadle yesterday was contingent. It's an older team, and they and Halak a goal two nights in a row. Obviously, we saw what happened in the last game,
right?
It being this, the second night of a back to back. maybe had an effect on him. Do you think there's a huge advantage to Tampa Bay for in that scenario?
You know, I wouldn't have thought so until we saw game three.
Yeah.
Like after game three, I don't know how you could think anything else.
But don't to me, game
three, got smoked, Ted.
They did, but it was like, but when they score, you know, back to back within 14 seconds, it can be demoralizing. And down 2-0 to Tampa Bay is not a typical. It's not your typical down 2-0 to any other team. I know it feels like it might as well be 5-0 at that point. But I just thought.
Yeah, well, then it was pretty soon after. It was 5-1, but yeah.
You're right. But I just feel like there was. They were, to me, I know, for the three quarters of that first period, they looked like they belonged until the Richie penalty. And then, of course, then.
That ridiculous goal with the ref, yeah.
So it was like it happened, boom, boom. And then it was already out of hand. To sit there and say. I thought they still had a little bit of fight. Cassidy didn't think after that they did. I thought they still had a little bit of fight. And then after, you know, once it gets to. 3-1 and 4-1, then it's pretty much Katie bar the door. It's over. But I thought it was everything kind of hinged on that those 14 seconds there late in the first period that decided that game. And to sit there and go, well, they suck or they're outmatched. Yeah, are they outmatched? Absolutely. Do things have to go their way if they're going to beat Tampa Bay? Yes. Does Halak have to play a lot better for them to win? Yes. Do I think he's capable of doing it? Yes. So I don't want to bury the Bruins like a lot of people are already burying the Bruins after game three like that.
I'm not burying them yet either. I don't think this series is over. I think that they gave Tampa the control of the series, which certainly didn't need to happen. But I would push back a little bit. A 2-0 lead is not you know, impossible to overcome.
I get it.
Or insurmountable. That Bergeron with the high stick in the second period, which led to the Sergachev goal, which made it 3-0, I thought was bad. The Bruins' penalties were sloppy and sort of ridiculous all throughout the game. Except in the first period, I thought those first two penalties, a little ticky-tack there. The slash on Richie I didn't like. The trip on Carlo I think was the other one. I thought both of those were kind of weak.
Okay.
But after that, I mean, they had several more power plays. The Bruins couldn't stay out of the penalty box.
But think what you just said, though. There was some questionable ticky-tack fouls or penalties that were called that if they don't happen, then to me, I think we're it's a totally different view of the game. I mean, it could have totally gone the other way. So I just think to sit here and kind of put the entire series – You know, encapsulated into just what Game Three presented, I think maybe a little bit too much, and I do find it interesting, Christian, how Bruce Cassidy is handling what happened after Game Three, going into Game Four. Mm. Some of his comments, he did kind of make some excuses about some of the things that happened in the game. He thought the Richie penalty was ticky tack. He did he did not like the lineman interference. That led to the second goal.
I mean, how could he? Might get fined for that, by the way.
Okay.
He might get fined for what he said.
Is that a typical, and I heard Felger Manage yesterday ripping Bruce Cassidy for those comments. Is that a typical comment that you would hear from Bruce Cassidy, quote-unquote, kind of making excuses for the loss with the referees and some of the calls?
I don't think that's not typical. From what I've heard from him, I don't hear him do that very often.
It's not.
That's rare for him.
But
yeah.
I think he is trying to go into the grab bag of mental kind of tricks. How can I get these guys motivated? And I feel like he felt at that time he needed to support his guys. He needed to back his guys, kind of like a manager in baseball, even though it's a questionable call. He's got to go out there, not let his player look bad. He's
got to turn it to the umpire
and
all that stuff.
To me, it's some of that. He's doing that to try and get his guys to fight. You can sit there and you can maybe, beat him down and call him out, which he has no problem doing. But I feel like at this instance of where they're at this stage of the season, he needs to maybe – do something a little bit different to get his guys fired up. And he's fired up about game four.
Right.
Which I like. He's kind of calling him, he's pretty much calling his shot about what his team's going to do and how they're going to respond in game four. That's typically not his style either. So I think he's doing things right now from a psychological standpoint that he typically doesn't do under the because of the unique circumstances he finds his team in right now.
Yeah. Let's listen to Cassidy. I know we talked about this yesterday, but here's Cassidy after game three.
I mean, a call on Richie happens 100 times a game. We happen to get flagged for it, right? So complete disagreement with that particular infraction. Not even sure Brandon's was. So you got an official injecting himself into a game with two of the best teams in the National Hockey League playing, and I thought that wasn't necessary.
Okay, real quick, T-Bone, that stuff right there, that's kind of crybaby crap.
I get it.
It is.
I get it. And, fans typically don't want to hear that. Media members don't want to hear that. I get that. I think it was a strategic kind of thing on his part to kind of do that. You know, some coaches, I've had coaches after a loss almost kind of be nicer and just kind of almost like, you know, be more supportive and, as opposed to just beating you down for a bad play. They kind of want to build you back up. Maybe he feels like doing that, taking that stance and that line, that way of approach is maybe psychologically, you know, going to help his team out.
Maybe, but then he continued and he kind of crapped all over the team too, so.
Second goal. I mean, come on. I mean, the linesman just runs our D out of room. Like it's a free pass to the net. Good for Yanni Gord for taking advantage of a break given to him. But I mean, when do you see that play happen in the National Hockey League? So all of a sudden you're two down and, you know, we need to kill a penalty, obviously better. Our penalty kill let us down tonight. It's been terrific all year. Really good in the playoffs so far. We didn't get it done in the PK, but so now you're in a 2-0 hole and you've played not a bad period. It's the rest of the game. We didn't respond. That's what I said. The disappointing part about that is we weren't able to get ourselves back in the game by killing any further penalties or creating offense or having our pushback. That's what we lacked tonight.
Other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the play? You know, we couldn't score. We couldn't kill penalties. We couldn't respond. We couldn't do anything. And, I mean, that's really, I think, the more accurate takeaway from this, because a 2-0 lead in the first period is not insurmountable. It's not something that they should be able to, you know, that Tampa Bay should be able to say, well, we're up 2-0. We can coast the rest of the way. And they didn't, by the way. The Bruins started getting chippy with them. The Bruins started throwing their weight around and taking some bad penalties, and the Lightning just basically said, all right, you want to do that? We're going to run up the score on you.
Right. No, they imploded. Like you could just see, they imploded and they lost their cool, and Tampa Bay made them pay. I was kind of curious. Taking Halak out. What was your initial reaction when you saw Halak coming out? And the backup?
I thought, here goes nothing. Let's see what this big Swedish guy is going to look like.
Was your feeling that Bruce Cassidy did that for what reason?
I think that he was.
Was he waving the white flag?
I think there was an opportunity there with Halak obviously struggling, and I'm not saying that was 100% his fault. I mean, there were some bad penalties there in that play with Gordon and the linesman and everything, not necessarily his fault, but he wasn't getting the job done. They'd only taken a few shots. He'd let in four goals at that point, and you have to give the guy, you have to spell him at that point. But Vladar, listen, Vladar was worse, I thought. I mean, Vladar looked like he was not ready to play in the NHL, and I know he was very good in the AHL, and I know he's very young, yeah, and it was his debut and everything else. But when I saw Cassidy take Halak out, I would imagine he thought, this is my only chance to really do this, to get a look at this kid and see if, you know, Halak has any more problems going forward. Can I turn to him? Mm-hmm. And I think, unfortunately, the answer to that is no.
But this is your like, what does Halak think? Is Bruce Cassidy taking Halak out? Is he sending a message to Halak, or do you think Halak comes out and he says, hey, look, man, it just wasn't our night. Look, you're going to be fine. We just want to get, you know what, at this point, we're pretty much, you know, we're waving the white flag and we're going to put the backup in there. Don't worry about it, that kind of thing. Or do you think he was doing that to teach, you know, kind of like send a message to him?
To Halak? I don't think you can afford to send a message to Halak like that. Not now.
Okay.
You know, he's not a young kid. He's 35 years old. He's older than Tuukka. Like, he's a veteran in this league. He knows the ins and outs of it. He took the Canadiens to the Eastern Conference Finals one year. I don't think he's a guy that needs a wake-up call like that, personally. But I don't know Yaroslav Halak. And I also know that every single goaltender in the NHL is a little touched in the head. You kind of have to be to do that job, I think. But as far as, you know, trying to teach him a lesson, I don't think they were trying to teach him anything. I think they just sort of looked at it and thought, this isn't working.
Okay.
We gotta get another look in there. And then they kind of realized, okay, Tampa's just better than us tonight. And it doesn't matter if Halak's out there, or Vladar's out there, or Tuukka Rask is out there, or Tim Thomas, or Dominic Hasek, or Martin Brodeur. Like, we're not going to win this game. And that's sort of how I felt about it, too. They could have put anybody out there. The Zamboni driver, Todd Angeli, the guy who sings the national anthem. Could have been anybody. I mean, you would have gotten the same result there. The Lightning were just a step faster and stronger and better.
Didn't have much help, though. I mean, the
defense was awful.
The two goals he gave up were essentially, the first one was like one of the prettiest breakaways you've seen.
Yeah.
The second one essentially was a breakaway. So, and they were, you got to admit, those were incredible goals. The patience that those two guys showed. So, you know, look, I just think the Bruce Cassidy, he is kind of talking in a way that I think can turn some people off. But I think there's a reason for why he's doing it. I think he knows his team, and it's a way to get his team fired up.
All right, 617-779-0985 is the phone number. We will get to your phone calls right after the headlines from my man Mike Sarge Riley.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
This is how the pros.
That's great. Thank you, Beef. You're proud of yourself.
Do Sports Talk Radio.
Your microphone is down. Hey, Marconi.
Just hit the button.
Turn the mic up.
I'm just,
Zolak and Bertrand on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
.10:37 here on the Sports Hub. Arcand in for Beetle. We got Big Ted in for Zoe. Mike Sarge Riley behind the glass here. 617-779-0985 is the phone number here on Zolak and Bertrand. We'll get to your phones in just a minute. We do have Bob Soucy coming up at 11:36. We'll talk with Bob in about an hour, get his take and his report from training camp. I do know, and we do know, that Jared Stidham made some comments saying he still believes he's part of this competition, which is just precious.
Okay.
Isn't he? Right.
Yes, it is. But is it so crazy to think that this competition, is it crazy to think, Christian, that this competition between the two guys might go well into the start of the season?
I guess that's not crazy to think about, considering there's no real preseason and no camps and stuff like that. They're having, some camps. But, yeah, I could see that happening if I thought that Stidham was really competing for it, which right now I kind of don't feel that way.
Wait, he can't, because he physically isn't close to being 100%.
Right.
And I do think that the hip injury is what pretty much was the reason he had kind of a lousy last 2 days of full participation. And is the reason why he was throwing interceptions at the end of last week, but because it was the injury definitely affected his accuracy. So to me, once that gets healed up, I still think it's an ongoing competition. And I was asked a month ago by Hardy when I was filling in, who's the starter week one? I don't know, a month ago, I thought it was Cam Newton. I said, but if you ask me who's going to be the starter after the bye week, Jared Stidham. I think the competition is going to go well. If things don't go well for this football team, if they start out 1-3, 2-2, and the offense doesn't look like it knows how to get out of its own way.
They've started 2-2 before and won the Super Bowl
with
Tom Brady.
Oh, boy. Yep.
They have. I'm not lying. They've done that before.
I think people, what you just bring up is such a, I think people are missing the, everybody, hey, Bill Belichick, his legacy is cemented as the greatest ever. Ever. Right. That we know just Bill Belichick's coaching can make up for maybe a lot of deficiencies you might have on the roster. However, the deficiencies he's had on the roster, he's always had what to cover up. It's not just the coaching that's covered up the deficiencies. It's the quarterback play.
Yeah.
So this is the first time he's coached without Tom Brady in 19 years. Okay, so let's see how Bill Belichick coaches without having Tom Brady, who covers up so many warts, so many wrinkles, so many issues you have.
Ultimate safety net.
Let's see what he can do without that ultimate safety net being right there to cover up the issues they might have in other parts of the on the field.
Sure. We'll get to that with Soucy in about an hour. In the meantime, there is a report coming from Jim Trotter over at NFL Media. Few prominent black players are telling him they want to sit out a game and make their feelings felt and force change in action there. We will touch on that. There's not too much more to that report, but it's now sort of starting to bleed into the NFL here, this idea, this movement of sitting out games, going on sort of a mini strike here, could be happening in the NFL as well. Let's go to your phones here at 617-779-0985. It's Friday. Things are wide open here. You want to talk Bruins, NBA, NFL. The Mets situation, which is pretty hilarious. Whatever you want, it's all on the table for you here. We'll start with Tim and Lowell. Go ahead, Tim.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good man. Tim.
Hey, I appreciate the conversation on the racial injustice and what the NBA players are doing. And I would agree it's debatable. Sitting out two games or canceling the whole season, which one would have more of an impact? But one impact that they've already had. And I've been teaching discrimination in a high school for 25 years. One is they have conversations going on, which is phenomenal. But the biggest one that I saw is they got the NHL to take games off. Why is that one so important? Because it's a predominantly white league. On issues of discrimination, like when I hear the African-American players saying what we can do, I'm like, we're looking to the people who are the victims of racism to solve it. When, like, we don't do that with women, I don't think we do that with women for sexism. We don't think it's their job. We think it's the men's job. We got to call each other out. Mm-hmm. On this issue, we need more white people. Like, if the NHL ever said we're done until this gets fixed, because now that's going to get, if a black person says something and I say something, they don't get heard. They get written off as an angry black person. Well, all of a sudden now I challenge them a little bit more because I look like them. So we really need more of us to step up and actually give, like, instead of asking the NFL player or the NBA players to give up paychecks, like, we're asking the victim to sacrifice even more than they've already sacrificed in this country, as opposed to if the NHL player said, you know what, we'll sacrifice it because we agree this is wrong. And if I could just make one suggestion to your listeners and to you guys. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the lady Jane Elliott. She separated her kids by eye color after Martin Luther King was assassinated. Brown eyes and blue eyes.
Oh, I know about this. Yeah. I know what you're talking about.
I was at her house earlier this summer on my way to Minneapolis to pay respects to where George Floyd was killed. I would recommend everybody go on YouTube. It's called Eye of the Storm, Jane Elliott, 1970. It's 26 minutes long. And watch what happens to these kids when they find out they're in the inferior group, or if they find out they're in the superior group. Watch how quickly they change. And then when you look at these protests, you'd sit and you'd be able to look at those little kids and say, okay, if these kids were treated like this the rest of their lives, which one of them might be a cop that goes over the line, and which one of them might be somebody that protests in a violent way?
Yeah, so, Tim, thanks for the call. I appreciate that. It was some good insight there. And I tend to agree with you with the NHL, except to say this. I don't think that we as a society were demanding that the NBA and the NBA players fixed it. Like, I don't think he says, well, we're asking the victims to do it. I'm not sure that that was like a formal request. Hey, can you guys fix racism? I think that was something they felt compelled to do. I don't think it was something that people were demanding that they do. I think they felt compelled to do it sort of organically, which I understand what he was saying. And with the NHL, that's another interesting point, because yes, it's a predominantly white league. It's also predominantly international. You know, there's a lot of people from other countries that don't have the same sort of racial animus that we have here in the U.S. A lot of Canadians, you know, I mean, it's just, it's different. And they jumped on the movement as well. And I think that that's, you know, that's powerful. Is it as you know, is it the most, it's not a movement until white people start talking about it. I don't think that's what the caller was trying to say. I do get what he means though. But yeah, I thought that was moving as well to see these other leagues kind of get involved with it.
Yeah, no, I like that the NHL decided to do it. I think that what's hard sometimes, and I had to learn this when I went to college for the first time, when I got into the NFL, even to another level, is I can't relate to maybe what the black athlete goes through. I can't relate. I can't even, it's hard for me to empathize because I've never experienced a lot of the things that, you know, my black teammates have had to experience. I mean, I'm sitting in these meetings and we're talking about, you know, bringing, you know, not having guns on premises. I remember there's a meeting about where you can't have a gun, you can't have it in your car. You can't, it's like obvious to me, like, okay, yeah, it's, you know, I'm not a gun guy anyway, but I just like, yeah, you don't want to be bringing it to the, and it was interesting just to hear some of my teammates talk about things that have happened in the past where they felt like they were, unsafe, and that they felt where they needed to have a handgun in their car or on their person at times. Zero relatability for me. It doesn't even register with me. But for my teammates, some of my teammates, that was a reality for them. So I think when you come to the NHL, if there's not a lot, there's not obviously not a lot of black athletes that play, you know, hockey. It's harder if you don't have guys to tell you, you know, teammates that are black to tell you kind of how it's been for them or how they, some of the issues they've had. Then it's a foreign concept to you. And so I think it's you know, maybe their initial reaction was that, well, they didn't get on board with it, but once you kind of hear what's going on around the country, I like that they decided, okay, we're going to just show some togetherness by agreeing not to play our games as well. After they were kind of educated for a day or so.
Yeah, and the NHL has some African-American players. It's not all white. You know, Matthew Dumba, Nelt, Ryan Reeves, Evander Kane, a lot of guys have sort of come out and spoken, and I feel like their teammates have rallied around them. The NHL has also been marred with some, you know, accusations of racism and things like that, and the minors and juniors and things of that nature, too. So maybe that's an area that they need to work on themselves, and they're trying to take that initiative, which I applaud all of that. 617-779-0985 is the phone number. We'll get to your Bruins calls right after this.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Comes to sports, they're knowledgeable.
Tell me about a pie that doesn't have a top over it.
And always on their game.
I walk around my house naked all the time.
Solak Embertrand, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
.10:52 here on the Sports Hub. Getting to the Patriots a little bit next hour. Jared Stidham still thinks he's competing. We'll discuss that. We'll discuss that with Bob Soucy as well when we talk to him at 11:36. Also, we're going to hear from the head coach of the Boston Celtics. We're not going to interview him because I guess he just doesn't do that anymore. But he will be speaking at noon, and we will carry part of that press conference right when it goes live. In the meantime, back to your phones. Adam is in Lowell with a thought on the Bruins. Go ahead, Adam. Oh, looks like I'm frozen, T-Bone. If you could pot up Adam, that would be terrific. Adam, hello.
Hey, guys. Hey, I agree with you guys. I hate complaining about the refs, too, but you know what? It seemed to work for the Blues last year. It seemed to work for the Lightning after game one. I mean, Maroon's running around doing whatever the hell he wants, and it just seems like no penalty whatsoever. We're getting called for every ticky-tack, minor slash, left and right. And we shouldn't have folded just because we got those bad calls, but Jesus, I mean, can we get something? I mean, I feel like the Lightning are playing by their own rules right now. Thanks,
yeah, thanks, Adam. Appreciate it. I'm still frozen if you could drop them there. I would say this. Those were some lousy calls, but that went on the whole game. I mean, they were taking bad penalties pretty much the entire game after that. Some really dumb one. McAvoy with that misconduct, I think.
Oh, that was the hit in the back of the head.
Yeah, I mean, that was pretty bad. And I don't know. I mean,
the Bergeron one was the high staking was, that was whatever. That happens.
It happens. It was a bad penalty, but, I mean, yeah. It does happen, and it did lead to a goal. And the other thing is you let Tampa's power play just start really firing on all cylinders. And I feel like once you let that genie out of the bottle, it's tough to put it back in. The Bruins' penalty kill I always thought was really strong, but the Lightning put them in their place the other night.
Three goals in a row off the power play for Tampa Bay. That's why, look, you can say, okay, ticky-tack fouls, some bad things happen. That's why I think it could have been a totally different game if let's face it, the Richie penalty – was what started the whole entire kind of scoring barrage. And if that call isn't called, maybe it's the game's completely different and the series has a different feel to it.
Yeah, I think that could very well be the
case.
That's
why I'm just not ready to bury the Bruins and say, I know they're outclassed. I know they're, you know, they have, you know, Tampa Bay has more skill. But you know what? There's some grit in this team as well. And I just don't think, you know, that I just, a lot of people write them off. I wouldn't do that.
Bruins are resilient. They have been. They're not always the best team, but they are resilient. They usually don't, you know, fold up and go home. And I don't think they're planning on doing that now. They have too many veterans who've been there before and know how to bounce back from a bad loss and don't, you know, let it consume them. Like, I look at a team like the Hurricanes, and I don't think they have that. They don't have that sort of resilience, the ability to bounce back after, you know, seemingly being on the brink of elimination. And against the Bruins in particular, I think they're just sort of in Carolina's head. But, Ted, look at the Bruins' record against teams that aren't the Carolina Hurricanes. They're 1-5. You know, I mean, that's not a mistake. And I know, listen, believe me, I was right there with you when everyone
games.
Those weren't preseason games. Everyone kept saying, well, we just treated them like exhibition games. Okay, well, what'd you treat Wednesday night like? Was that an exhibition game too? Because you got smoked in that game, just like you got smoked in those three round-robin games that you said didn't matter. And by the way, in one of them, Halak was the goalie in that Philly game, and he gave up four goals. So, I mean, you know, it may, if they can't get their act together this weekend, it may be time to take a good long look at the Bruins and exactly what they are and what last year was in terms of getting to the Cup Final without having to play Tampa, without having to play Washington. They have to play Tampa this year, and they're having a lot of trouble with them. I think that's a fair thing to bring up.
You know, it is a fair thing to bring up, but that's why I just think my feeling is Cassidy feels it like this might be the last year. I mean, this might be the last year with the kind of to keep the band together, if you will. With a lot of guys aging, Char, I don't know, was he got one more year on his deal? But let's face it, I mean, he looks like he's cooked, and we know that Bergeron and Marchand aren't spring chickens either. So this might be the last hurrah, and who knows what Rask is going to do coming back next year. So there's so much on the line in game four, not just for how it ends this year, but maybe just for legacies moving forward with some of the more popular players that have been here for a long time.
Yeah, and by the way, in case you missed it, the updated schedule for the Bruins and Lightning, Game 4 is tomorrow at 12 noon. Game 5, no back-to-back, thank God, for Games 4 and 5. I thought for sure there would be. I thought for sure they were going to do Sunday, Monday, or Saturday, Sunday, something like that. But instead, 6 and 7 could be back-to-back if it even gets that far. We'll see. But Game 4 is Saturday at noon. Game 5, Monday night at 7 o'clock. 617-779-0985. Let's go to Albert in Randolph. Hello. Hello, Albert. I'm frozen again. We're having real phone trouble here, T-Bone, if you would. Albert, go ahead.
How you doing?
What's up?
Good morning. Yeah, I want to talk about Doc Rivers the other night. Real pathetic. Real pathetic, man.
What was pathetic about it?
I'm a black guy, man, and I'm a black person. And he just sounds so pathetic, man. I'm not really with all that patheticness, man.
What was Albert? What was pathetic about it?
They don't love us, and all we do is love this country. Come on, man. This is just pathetic. It's too pathetic, man. Hey, cut the cornball stuff out. Stop asking for people who don't like you to like. It's corny, man. Come on. And there's a bigger problem too that people ain't really looking at. There's a bigger problem in our community, our black community. There's a bigger problem that they ain't really looking at. It's real pathetic, man. Nobody's really. You can't fix one thing and not fix the other thing. It's real pathetic.
What are you referring to, Albert?
The crime rate, the way people react. It's also reaction. It's not just one thing. It's not one thing with the police. It's how people react when the police come. It's all pathetic, man. It's pathetic behavior, man. Everyone's too emotional and act like crybaby. You got to know how to act when the police come. So just don't stop doing extracurriculum, But, it is what it is, man. And, they need to play basketball because I need something to watch.
All right. Albert, thanks for the call. Listen, I don't necessarily agree with Albert, but he's entitled to his opinion.
I'm not exactly sure what he was,
He didn't quite nail down why he didn't like it or what the issue was there. But listen, hey, I mean, not everybody. That's the thing is you're not going to get. And we saw that in the NBA. Not everybody agreed with skipping the games. Not everybody wanted to do that. A lot of players did. Some players didn't. Some players were mad at the Bucks for taking the game off and going on that little mini strike. And some players agreed with it 100%. Some players didn't even want to be there in the first place. So to say that everybody is all on the same side of all of this is wrong. It's just not true. And I think people are entitled to their opinions on it. I think that, black voices in particular should have more of a say here. And I understand, us saying that is kind of its own weird thing. But I'm not going to begrudge him. I disagree with him. I'm not going to begrudge him for saying that. I thought what Doc said was very strong. I thought it was powerful. I didn't think it was pathetic. But that was my take on it. That was my interpretation.
Well, there might be a lot of people that don't know what Doc said. Maybe we can get that form because it was an emotionally fueled statement that he had to say. And if people didn't hear it, it might be worth playing for these guys.
Yeah, sure. 617-779-0985 is the phone number. We have your headlines here from Mike Sarge Riley. Then we'll get into the Patriots. Bill Belichick having a little powwow with his players about social justice and some other things. We have some remarks from that from some of the players, and we'll get into that right after this.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Sports Hub.
Matey.
Well, you're at work.
Scott Zolak.
I think it's a disaster.
Mark Bertrand.
I know. I want to get it out.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
.11:03 here on the Sports Hub. Arkin in for Beetle. We got Big Ted in for Zoe. Mike Sarge Riley over there. We got T-Bone and...
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
They work.
Matey.
Well, you're at work.
Scott Zolak.
I think it's a disaster.
Mark Bertrand.
I know. I want to get it out.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
.11:03 here on the Sports Hub. Arkin in for Beetle. We got Big Ted in for Zoe. Mike Sarge Riley over there. We got T-Bone and B-Rob behind the glass taking your phones at 617-779-0985. We've been talking about, well, a lot of different things here in the first hour. Bruins schedule is out. The NBA and that whole story in the last 48 hours. We have more on that as well. Patrick Beverley acting like a real jackass in that meeting, which we will get to in a little bit. But right now, wanted to talk about the Patriots and, in particular, Bill Belichick, who had a had some conversations, it sounds like, with his team about some of these issues that have been really casting a shadow over the entire sports world, if not all of society right now. And Bill was asked about that today. Here's what he had to say.
Well, I'll keep the things that happened within the team, privately within the team. That was the, that's kind of the forum that we had. So I'll maintain the integrity of that, but I've certainly learned a lot, continue to learn a lot, and we have an incredible group of players. I'm so proud of this team and the players we have on it. They're the way that they're involved in each other's lives as teammates, the way that they raise their families and are involved in the community on a number of different levels. So we've always prided ourselves in doing things right and not only being a good football team, but being a pillar in the community. That continues to be our goal and our expectation, and I'm so proud of what our players do on all those levels.
What is he saying there, really? Is there anything profound or anything that he said there that's specific to what is really going on that's that provocative or interesting?
No, but I think he kind of prefaced that by saying we're going to keep the conversations in house. You know, I mean, if he wanted to go on and talk about every little thing and who said what and everything else.
Aren't you curious, like, what was it? Did Bill have a open forum, what open dialogue, where he addressed this specific issue that is going on with his team? Was it were there breakout meetings? Was it just him and the captains that talked about this and what they should say to the team about this? I'd like to know, what is that tangibly look like, Bill talking to his players about this? We're not going to get the answer because he obviously is going to keep it in house. But I'm just, players talk. We had good discussions. It's a very kind of ambiguous way in which you address this. And I think that's kind of Bill's MO when it comes to issues like this is, we talked, we're listening, we're pillars of the communication. We have good guys, we're good family men, yada, 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 and we move on. I guess I'm just questioning exactly what goes on behind closed doors specifically to this issue that I think is really beneficial for the players. I question that because of how he's talking right there. I don't know. Most football coaches don't address stuff like this, Christian.
Right.
They don't have the they don't care about it. They don't want to talk about it. Now, it's a different athlete. It's a different age than when I played, so maybe
you guys didn't have big meetings like that,
never
right?
Never about stuff like this. Never. But it was a completely different time then as well. So look, I'm outdated. I might not know what's going on in today's
September 11th, did you guys meet and talk or anything? Or
you know what? Well, you had to address it, but it was
right.
But it wasn't like we had all this, you know, these we all held
it
hands
wasn't like
and this kumbaya, you know, right. About nationalism and you know, it was just something like, okay, well, are we going to play this Sunday? Are we not going to play? How's it going to affect, you know, our schedule moving forward? But there wasn't any real deep discussions about, you know, the safety of our country and you know, us as Americans. None of that. None of that. You know what was a big kind of event in the early 2000s that I was shocked when I came into the locker room? Shocked that guys weren't talking about it. I remember I was getting to the training room. I'm going to get my
Jay-Z put out Blueprint 2. No, it wasn't that.
It wasn't that.
Oh, okay. I don't know.
That was a close second. It was, we didn't have a president. I forget, was it 2000, 2002? We didn't have a president.
2000.
Yeah, 2000.
Yeah, we didn't have a president.
Florida.
The day after election, who's the president? Who the hell knows? Nobody was talking about it.
Then they had that guy in Florida with the magnifying glass looking at the balance.
And I remember coming to work going, this is the craziest thing. We don't have a president.
I don't think we had one until like the 3 days before Christmas that year.
Right.
That's how crazy it was.
But my freshman year of
the
college.
Recount.
I don't know. That was kind of a big story back then, right?
Sure.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And I just thought it was a big enough story that guys actually in the locker room would be talking about it. No one gave two flips that there wasn't a president you know, the day after of election. So it's typically not – these aren't big discussions. Now, again, it's a different time, a different era, different athlete. It's more
– different topic.
Different topic.
Yeah.
True. So maybe there is more discussions, but I just kind of sometimes want to just pump the brakes on that. There's NFL coaches or enlightened people who want to, you know, have all their players talking about these issues, and we're all working through it, and we're all trying to find solutions. That is such an overblown narrative. It's ridiculous.
The Patriots today, and I don't know. I mean, you guys didn't do this back then, but it's maybe difficult to speak to. But today it seems as though there are a lot of very vocal players on the team, in particular the McCourties, who are guys that have been there. Well, Devin's been there a while and has a lot of influence in that locker room and is probably on the defensive side anyway, the most respected guy there.
Him and Slater. They're not outspoken, though. They just talk about. They're not.
Yeah,
do they say?
I mean, they have a podcast. They talk on their podcast every
week.
But
is there anything that comes out of there that's whoa? Like wow, that's. Can you believe they said that
during COVID? A couple times they really questioned the NFL and whether
okay,
or not
they questioned,
you know, coming
NFL.
Back and things like that. You're right. I mean, they're not.
But it's
not like they're Jim Rome over here with hot takes or anything. But yeah,
right. And they're not saying anything that's like really like wow, can you believe they said that? They're not trying to rally, you know, other players to stand up and boycott. They're just saying how fush, and I get, look, I respect that, but they're not saying anything that's really like divisive or controversial or provocative. And I'm not saying that, you know, they need to. I'm just saying it's not really anything that is so out of bounds that it is going to, I think, stir the pot, if you will, or get guys thinking. It's a very kind of just very simple kind of, you know, things that I think people can all relate to, but it's not going to, I think, ultimately have a huge impact on the team.
There's another little thing with the NFL that no one's really talking about, and I think that this, you know, we talk about the NBA and how they're not even totally unified, but I do think in terms of the matters and things that are going on right now, the issues going on right now, for the most part, just about every NBA player, not all of them, but most of them, I think, sort of fall into the same camp. In the NFL, there's a lot more... How do I put this? Political diversity in those locker rooms, you know what I mean? Like it's not all people who maybe agree on the issues. And I think that social economics, political leanings,
right,
things of that nature, I think that there's more diversity as far as that's concerned.
And there's a lot more
in the
players,
NFL.
Too.
And there's more players. And there's more, you know, the offense is over here and the defense is over here. Mm-hmm. And we draw sides. And this is who we talk to. And this is mm-hmm. who we spend time with. And I think that so far in the NBA and in some other, you know, in the NHL too, maybe, but I'm not totally sure about that. But in the NBA, I think everyone tends to be pulling in the same direction. in the NFL, I wonder if that's going to be the case, because the owners don't support their players protesting the way the NBA does. That's for damn sure. I think we all agree with that. And that can trickle down. That can trickle down into the locker room with some white players or whoever else that maybe don't think that all these protests are worth doing and things of that nature. And I sort of wonder, is that going to be a problem in these locker rooms? If players decide, you know, I don't want to play this week, or I think we should all do this, or I think we should all do that. That's a problem that I don't think the NBA is gonna come across. And the NFL, I mean, that could be, we got 2 weeks to go here before this whole thing starts. They could be dealing with that very soon.
I don't think that's gonna be an issue.
No.
And you would think it there would be more ripe for potential issues because of all the reasons you just stated, but it's a completely different game than the NBA. And what's the biggest difference between the NBA and the NFL when it comes to issues? You always have to look at just the economic structure. The NFL, you don't have guaranteed contract. Mm. It's the shorter career span. It's on average of the major sports leagues, you get paid, you have the shortest career, and you get paid the lowest average salary of all the major sports. It's a coach's league. The coaches and the front office have all the power, not the players. The players in the NBA, the players in Major League Baseball, they have the power. In the NFL, the coaches have the power. And so it's a completely different deal. Players in the NFL are more timid, are more afraid to stand up, say anything, you know, voice their opinions because of the backlash they could get, or potentially you know, being cut because of what they say. You see time and time again, guys getting cut for something they say in the media. So guys are going to be more hesitant to say anything, Christian, because, you know, of a potential, you know, repercussions that come from that. It's just guys are afraid to say anything in the NFL because they don't have the leverage. The coaches, the owners have the leverage in that league.
Yeah, I think you're right there. 617-779-0985 is the phone number. Let's go back out to the phones, talk to Jerome, who is in Roxbury. Hello, Jerome.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
What's up? What's up, man?
Good, good. Long-time listener. This is the first time I'm actually calling in, but I felt like I had to after your last caller. I believe his name was Albert. I am, you know, African-American myself, and what issues he's speaking on is completely different than what, you know, these players are protesting and standing up about. Everyone realizes there's crime in every neighborhood. It's just how it's reported. So how it's skewed to look one way, there's, you know, black on black crime, there's white on white crime. Like, it's all perspective. What we're talking about is the people who are supposed to protect and serve everyone, you know, lashing out and you know, being violent with those that, you know, aren't violent or in possession of anything, and that's what we're talking about. We're talking about justice and equality. So what he was speaking on, I have no idea or clue with what he was talking about, but I think Doc Rivers hit it right on the head, and I'm really proud of what these players are doing and standing up. And I'm not sure which, you know, one of you guys said it, but I believe you're completely right as far as, you know, I think the NBA should have probably cancel to make a louder message and to really, you know, force people to sit down and think about what's going on. I think it's up to the NFL players now, and like you said, it's a owners league, and the players don't really have much say. They really need to find a way where they can try to take back some of that leverage and put onus on their owners to get behind the message and get behind, you know, the movement and everything that they're doing. Because, you know, I have friends of all different colors and backgrounds, and you know, we joke about things, but at the end of the day, like, I don't think they personally would like to see the things that are happening to people that look like me happen to me, and it really doesn't touch people until it affects someone they really know. So I think we just need to keep having the conversation. I think you know, people who call in, it's fine to have their opinions, but honestly, they have no idea what they're talking about.
All right, so Jerome, just, well put. Yeah, sure. Yeah. That's well put. I didn't agree with Albert's call either, but I'm not going to, you know, scream and yell at somebody who has a different opinion from me, especially, you know, the African-American bride. Just it's not, I don't feel like that's constructive. I didn't agree with what he had to say. I tend to lean more towards what Jerome was saying there, but, you know, that's sort of what this is all about. We have all this access to each other, and no one talks to each other.
I agree.
You know? Like,
I agree.
That's what 2020 is.
And one point that Jerome made that I'm gonna be on. This is the last time I'm on until next, like, one day next week. But I'm gonna hammer this before we get off. It is the onus, and when it comes to this issue and sports and what to do to help create change and postponing and canceling, it comes down to the owners of the sports leagues partnering with the players. The players can maybe want to do this, but if the owners don't agree and don't partner up, then it'll never happen. The owners of these major sports leagues, particularly basketball and the NFL, have a ton. To me, the onus is on them. They have all the power. They're the ones that can actually help create change and reform, but they have to partner up with the players to get it done. The players can't do it alone.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's the truth. And that speaks to a lot of different things, but certainly I think in the NFL, it's much more clear that needs to happen. 617-779-0985 is your phone number. When we come back, more on the Patriots, not so much on Belichick and social justice, but on the quarterback competition, which according to one of the quarterbacks is still very much a competition. We'll get into that next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.